many years back.
This is a gamma function.
So admittedly, I will be chewing on all bread with the hope that it's not yet stale. And we started this research by asking the question, how do particles decay in inflationary cosmology? And the main question behind that question was, if the inflaton couples to other fields, it can decay into other fields, can potentially affect the power spectrum. And similarly with curvature perturbations. So those were our motivating questions. And so we recognized that in order to answer those questions, we had to move away from the usual paradigm of understanding particle decay. And in order to explain to you what actually led us to the method that we finally developed to understand these ideas, let me just go through the textbook exercise of asking a question in Minkowski, flat Minkowski spacetime, how do particles decay? And we will see the subtleties that we'll have to overcome as we move over to the Sitter space. And so the question is, first of all, and this is the question that will eventually escalate to the Sitter space, how do particles decay and how do we calculate this process of decay? And just for specificity, let me focus on a given model. It's going to be a model of two scalar interacting fields, phi and a little phi here with a trilinear coupling. And we can begin asking these questions in an elementary manner by, first of all, focusing on the self-energy. This is the particle that is decaying into these two other particles. And we can begin asking this question from the point of view of field theory by focusing on the self-energy of this particle phi. And the self-energy is basically this quantity here in Minkowski spacetime. This vertex I'm going to depict in this manner. This is G. And a textbook quantum field theory solution of this problem basically asks you to calculate the full propagator for this particle phi, which is nothing but a Dyson series of this propagator, and in Fourier transform for both spatial momentum and energy, this is a quantity that is called sigma of k. This is k, sigma of k, sigma, sigma. This is a geometric Dyson series, and that eventually the full propagator here is k squared minus m squared minus sigma k, which are my epsilon prescription that tells me how to actually look for the poles. And if I want to understand the time evolution of this particle here, what I want to do is the inverse Fourier transform in time of this propagator. Yes?
How do you consider that the planet is bound from below?
I'm not concerned. This is perturbation theory.
Okay.
I assume that there is a mass term and there is perturbation theory, and all of the pathologies associated with these interactions I'm just going to overlook. But in principle, you're right, yes. And so when I look at the analytic form of this, there is a pole near very close to the real axis. And near this pole, this quantity can be written. There is a complex pole. But there is a pole here, and it's complex, and it's basically giving you this type of quantity when we evaluate this self-energy near this pole. And if we do the inverse transform of this, so it's basically the Fourier transform in time, and this is basically dk0 e to the minus k0 t, and I'm just going to put here the retarded because I want propagation forward in time. This complex pole near the real axis, which corresponds to a width determined by the imaginary part of this self-energy, that basically leads to an exponential decay. This is the Weissskopf-Wigner approximation, e to the minus I omega renormalized k times t. And so this amplitude of this field is decaying with this quantity gamma that we insist on calling the decay rate of this particle. The second part of a field theory exercise would calculate directly that gamma from unitarity. And let me just go through that simple calculation again. What I want to do with these textbook examples is just give you the gist of the idea, all of the technical aspects, and there are technical aspects galore, you can find them here. So I just want to give you the gist of the idea behind the method in order for you to understand or decode, rather, what's there. So the second approach to this would be to invoke a unitarity, and then a gamma is basically this quantity squared by unitarity, and then when you calculate this quantity squared, you find that these are two factors, g squared divided by 2, the energy of the phi particle, d3p. Please allow me to write this because I want to make an important point. It's a 2 pi times the delta of the energy of the phi minus the energy of 1 minus the energy of 2 divided by 2e1, e2. So two-body phase space. I've integrated already one using two-body phase space. And the important aspect here is that there is a threshold towards decay, namely this particle has to have a mass m larger than twice the mass, which is the threshold obtained by this. All of this is elementary. So the last approach will take us back in quantum mechanics. And if we just decided to ask Mr. Fermi how he would do this calculation, and he would actually calculate a transition matrix element. And so let me just tax your patience with a third example here. And what Fermi would do is he would calculate actually the transition amplitude from some initial time to some final time of some initial state that has one phi quanta to a state that has finally two chi quanta. And so this quantity is simply the integral from CTI to TF of one quanta chi with momentum P, one quanta chi with momentum P minus K, E to the IH0T, the interaction Hamiltonian, E to the minus IH0T, and one quanta with phi with momentum K, and then you integrate in time. This is just first order interaction in the interaction picture, and just took this because I want to make the point that this being eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, Emil claims that he's not an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. But if this being eigenstates of the Hamiltonians, these are simple phases. This obviously is going to change when we go to the Sitter space because the mode functions are not going to be this type of simple phases. This calculation is trivial. Again, let me just write this answer. It's a G, square root of 2 E phi, square root of 2 E phi. I'm not going to bother with the volume factors, normalizations. My point doesn't require that. And finally, there is this famous sine function, which is EK phi minus E chi P minus K minus E chi P multiplied by TF minus TI divided by E minus E minus E. This what I have in the argument. This is straightforward. I'm just taxing your patience. And please bear with me. Two things here. First of all, this is where translational invariances manifest. Secondly, what I want to find out is the long time limit of this quantity and then calculate the transition probability in the long time limit. Namely, what I want to calculate is TFI squared. And this quantity is the G squared divided by the energies, et cetera, et cetera. But most importantly is this function E minus E minus E. Let me call this T, total quantity T is the total time evolved between initial and final divided by E minus E minus E squared. And finally, to calculate the total transition probability in the long time limit, we integrate over the momenta. But let me not do that trivial step, and let me just stop here. This is where time translational invariance comes in. And if I take the long time limit of this, this quantity, believe it or not, goes on to 2 pi, the total time, times the delta function, e minus e minus e. So what this is saying is that in the long time limit, there is energy momentum conservation. I already used momentum conservation. There is energy conservation. And therefore, if I calculate the total PFI with respect to the total time, this is gamma. And this is the way that all our students have been instructed to calculate. In fact, they were already told from the beginning, don't bother about this. We already know Fermi's Cauchy rule from quantum mechanics. Calculate this by taking minus infinity and infinity. And that is what you would call the U infinity minus infinity is the S matrix. Okay. Now, the thing is, if we want to attempt to do in something like this in the Sitter space, we already face several potential problems. First of all, these mode functions are nowhere near these simple exponentials. Energy is not conserved, so we have to depart from this paradigm to calculate what the rate is. So we need a real-time approach, because in the Sitter space-time, at least in the coordinates or conformal coordinates or cosmic time, there is no energy conservation. And so let me propose, still being in Minkowski space-time, yet another approach which builds in the physics that we want to get at. So let me consider, first of all, a linear response problem in which I couple an external source inducing an expectation value and giving the field an expectation value that would make the field to be up in their in its potential. So this is basically the expectation value phi, which I'm going to call x. In any free field theory, what this object is if I release my source, this is just going to oscillate. It's going to oscillate around with some fixed amplitude. If there is a decay into other particles over which I've already traced in my loop expansions, then I would expect, in fact, that if I plot the evolution of phi as a function of time, well, it's going to do something like this. And this envelope here is the quantity that is describing the decay. So what I'm looking for is to understand the time evolution of the amplitude. And so what I want to do is actually obtain a differential equation for this amplitude that would tell me how this amplitude will actually fall in time. And I will call a decay rate when I extract from this amplitude how this amplitude decays as a function of time, namely, what is the time behavior of this envelope. In a Weisskopf-Wigner approximation, when the weight of the particle is very small, this is obviously an exponential. In the Sitter space, we'll have to do something else. And I claim that this approach can be translated vis-a-vis to the Sitter space. So let me actually implement this approach in Minkowski space-time to see how things work. And you will see the gist of the idea here. So let me consider, first of all, such an interacting theory. And what I want to do is obtain an equation for the expectation value of this field. Again, the idea is that I had displaced the expectation value of its equilibrium position, and I'm going to release it from some initial value and let it evolve in time and see how that expectation value evolves in time and fish out what is the envelope of that solution. So that is the idea. And so when I look at the Lagrangian, just put this down here, the way to implement this is the following. It's called the tadpole method. I'm going to write a phi as its expectation value chi. This object here is the expectation value phi, plus some variable psi that has vanishing expectation values to all orders in perturbation theory. And so when I have my Lagrangian now, 1/2 d mu phi squared minus m squared over 2 phi squared minus g phi squared, dot, 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 dot. And I will pursue this program solely for phi. Then when I expand this, I'm going to find minus d mu plus m squared d mu chi multiplied by psi minus g chi phi squared minus g psi phi squared. What is it that I want to calculate? I want to calculate the expectation value of x. Namely, this is the trace of x rho being a density matrix, which could just be the ground state of the theory, okay, divided by the trace of rho. Now, this object evolves in time as u of t. This is the unitary time evolution forward, rho of some initial time 0, u to the minus 1 of t. And this simple idea here is actually justifying what we here call the in-in formulation. It's just that we are calculating expectation values and that the density matrix evolves forward with u, backwards in u minus 1. If we offer a path integral representation, there will be a path along forward in time, another path backwards in time, and those are the paths that have been drawn before. I'm not going to pursue that aspect here, but suffice it to say that I can proceed to obtain the equation of motion systematically, order by order, in perturbation theory. Details are available, and let me just write it down. So it's going to be, upon doing Fourier transform in space, it's going to be a second time derivative of the momentum Fourier transform here. This is the expectation value, omega k squared chi k of t, plus now there is an integral minus infinity to t here of something that is called c sigma retarded k t minus t prime chi k of t prime equals 0. This is the retarded version of the self-energy that I had there, but in real time. And the beauty of the in-in formulation is that it automatically gives a causal equation of motion. Namely, it only knows about from the past history, but these integrals are automatically cut off at t. Now, again, because I'm in Minkowski spacetime, the self-energy is a function of the time difference, so I can do Laplace Fourier transform and solve this problem trivially by Laplace Fourier transform. And let me just do it to actually make contact with this. Again, this is the equation of motion that I had obtained from for this expectation value, namely for the amplitude of this expectation value by the end of this method. And so if I go to Laplace variables, yes, yes. It is a linear equation. I've linearized this. This is in linear.
Oh, you just threw it in.
Just I threw everything. I could.
No, I understand.
Yes, yes. And if I take in terms of the Laplace variable S, this is trivial. It's basically some chi k of 0 plus some chi dot divided by s squared. This is plays the role of the frequency, imaginary frequency, plus omega k squared plus sigma r of ks. And then you see immediately that this is just a geometric Dyson series in the Laplace transform here. And all I have to do to obtain the final time evolution, do the inverse transform in the imaginary complex plane. And I will pick up the poles again here. Okay? And those poles are going to just reproduce that result. Now,
yes. Are you observing an analogy or are you proving an equivalence?
Well, if you let me continue, you will see where I really want to get to. Up to this point, the main message up to this point is that this equation of motion is akin to that Dyson resummation. And that will actually answer some of the questions that you plan to pose eventually. Now, our main purpose was not this. Our main purpose is to actually generalize this to a situation in which we have a time-dependent background. So we cannot generalize this in general simply because the self-energy is going to be a function of two times, different two times, and there is not going to be any Laplace Fourier transform available. So we want to generalize this, and the best idea is to go back to the equation in real time and see what else you can do in real time to solve this. And here is where the method of this dynamical renormalization group that has been talked about here. And the idea is, when I look at this equation, write my solution as a power series expansion. Notice that this object is of order g squared here, as a power series expansion in g. Okay? And so let me just, without further ado, propose that. So I'm going to write at chi, it's going to be a chi 0 plus g squared chi 1 plus da 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 da. And then chi dot 0 plus omega k squared chi 0 is 0. So I know exactly what this is. This is e to the minus I omega k t plus b e to the I omega k t. A and b are determined by initial conditions. Finally, 1 plus omega k squared x1 equals minus the integral sum t minus t prime chi 0 of t prime dt prime. And da 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 da, there is a hierarchy of equation. And what I want to do is solve this in perturbation theory to try to learn how to generalize this to the sitter. Okay. This can be solved by knowing exactly what the Green's function of this operator is. I know that this is boring, but let me go through the boring part before I can get to have fun. Yes, yes. No, no, no. This is all Minkowski space time.
Then aren't we taught that on shell, which is what you're doing, you're working out the corrections to the mode functions. Aren't we taught that we're supposed to renormalize such that there just aren't any corrections?
Let me work through that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's coming. And so chi 1 of t is simply the integral from 0 to t, the Green's function of this operator, which also is a function of t minus t prime, times, I'm going to call all of these beasts here r of t prime. Okay? And I know exactly what this is. And therefore, I can exactly calculate this. And I do the calculation. And lo and behold, what happens in the calculation is that you find that there are secular terms. And so let me write down what is the answer to this calculation, and let me make clear that that answer actually has built in what I had just said before. So x1 of t happens to be a e to the minus I omega t, and the a and the solutions are coming because this is linear, okay? And then there is an alpha times t plus da 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 da, plus a b e to the minus I omega k t, a beta times t plus da 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 da, and this is in the long time limit, whereby alpha is actually minus I, the imaginary part of the self energy evaluated at m, or rather at omega k, minus sigma I evaluated at m. And this beta here is I sigma r m minus sigma I at m. Now, these linear secular terms are nothing but Fermi's golden rule. And in fact, the fact that there are these linear time dependences and this self-energy has been evaluated at the threshold is nothing but the delta function that I had before. So we see in perturbation theory a manifestation of Fermi's golden rule building up in terms of secular terms. But if I look at these type of terms and I add the unperturbed solution, it looks as though this quantity is a renormalization of the amplitude. And to make that more specific, let me write this full solution here. So the full solution up to first order, obviously, x of t is actually a e to the minus I omega t 1 plus alpha t plus da da da, and these da 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 stand for non-secular terms. plus b e to the I omega k t 1 plus beta t plus dot, dot, dot. And obviously, if I insist on pursuing my perturbative expansion for very long times, there will be a breakdown of perturbation theory. And at this point is where I want to advertise precisely that these are going to end up becoming these famous logarithms in the Sitter space time. And so we are still in Minkowski, and let's see how to patch up and fix up this idea. Now, those of you versed on renormalization, if you translate these T's in terms of logarithms of cutoffs, then this is the typical perturbative expansion that you get for amplitudes, okay? And so the idea here is to, because they look just like corrections to the amplitude, i.e. wave function renormalizations, we can absorb these secular divergences at a given particular scale. So let me just implement that by writing my amplitude A is going to be some amplitude at some scale tau times some wave function renormalization tau. And similarly, B is going to be a B of tau times a set B of tau. This is just a simple definition here. But I'm going to expand set A as 1 plus G squared set A plus dot, 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 and set B equals 1 plus G squared set B plus dot, 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 dot. And I'm going to impose that these renormalization coefficients absorb the secular divergences at a particular scale tau. Okay? So when I write this, I'm going to request that this term kills to order G squared the secular divergence at the scale T tau, that this term kills the secular divergence here at the scale tau. And when I implement this, so let me just write the final answer here. So x of t now becomes a of tau e to the minus I omega k t 1 plus alpha t minus tau. You see at the time t equals tau, the secular divergence is plus dot, 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 plus a b of tau e to the minus I omega k t 1 plus a beta t minus tau plus dot, 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 dot. This solution does not depend on this arbitrary scale tau. I mean, I made the point of not writing this arbitrary scale tau. So that means that d chi d tau equals zero. This is a renormalization group equation because any change of tau is going to be absorbed in the change of the amplitude. Okay? So to this order, I find the renormalization group equations for the amplitudes d d tau minus alpha a of tau, d b d tau minus beta b of tau equals zero. Trivially, I solve these equations. Okay. And lo and behold, after I solve this equation, I can choose my scale tau arbitrarily. I'm going to choose it to be t, because I have improved my perturbation theory by choosing tau arbitrarily close to the long time t. So now I'm going to choose my renormalization scale. This is exactly what you do in the renormalization group to see how the gamma functions, which are the amplitudes, basically scale with momentum. This is exactly the same idea, no more, no less. Yes. The better than what?
No, it's the one-loop accuracy. It's one-loop accuracy. It's
so,
one
so you only know the self-energy, the self-energy
to one loop, to the order that I work the self-energy. Yes, yes.
And so let me just look at the final solution. X of t is simply then some a0 e to the minus gamma t e to the minus I omega k plus sigma real of t, this is the renormalization of the mass of the frequency, the lamp shift here, plus b0 e to the minus gamma t e to the minus I to e to the plus I omega carry plus sigma v. Simply because the betas have different signs. Oh. Yeah, okay. I erase the blackboard. Wait a minute. So this is the main idea. I'm going to apply this idea to the Sitter space-time. I'm not going to get into the technicality simply because they are available here. What is not available there is sort of this pathological, sorry, pedagogical explanation of this dynamical renormalization group. And pathological. So let me move on to the Sitter space-time, and I'm going to choose a coordinate 1 over h eta d eta plus dx, spatially flat. And I'm going to consider the conformally rescaled fields here. All of these now becomes a standard. And so my Lagrange, my action is d eta d3x. My conformally rescaled fields, I insist on calling. And let me just deal with only one field, chi, okay? My Lagrangian L chi, I'm going to take, for obvious reasons, minus. And then there is this m squared, which depends on eta divided by 2 chi squared. Anticipating mass renormalization, I'm going to add a counter term here, delta m squared eta chi squared. And then there is a minus g c eta. This object is 1 over h eta chi cubed minus lambda chi fourth. Yes, this is where this is. And in fact, let me just write that down. Actually, this is a curly M here. And this M squared eta is basically C squared, M squared minus C double prime over C. And this object I'm going to write as 1 over eta squared, nu squared minus 1/4. All of this is standard, folks. This one is a counter term. And I can add counter terms for this other interaction, but because I anticipate the renormalization of the frequency just as I obtain here, just put a mass counter term here, and I'm going to use to kill divergences. Okay? And I'm going to introduce a quantity delta, which is 3/2 minus nu. This quantity will pervade the calculation, and I insist that this is actually an infrared cutoff. In fact, this quantity happens to be proportional to m squared over h squared, and I'm going to consider that this is much smaller than 1. Okay. I will propose the same program here. I'm not going to go through the details. The details are spelled out there. And the program basically calls for calculating the equation of motion for the expectation value. And so let me just write it down. So it's going to be chi double prime Fourier mode k plus k squared minus nu squared minus 1/4 over eta squared chi k plus integral from some eta 0 that I can leave unspecified up to eta. And then there is the self-energy here that has k. And obviously now it's a function of eta and eta prime, chi k of eta prime, d eta prime. And all of this is 0. Now, what is the self-energy? Let me just show them here. Well, this is going to be the counter term, m squared eta. This is local. There is the tadpole that we just talked about before. This quantity is also local because it's a tadpole. And then there is this quantity here. It's the same field that I'm talking about here. So before I had wiggle lines, I'm talking about the same field. And this quantity has an eta prime, and it's a G squared. And this is the same type of self-energy. But now this self-energy is calculated with the mode functions here in the Sitter space-time. Technical point addressed in those articles. Well, first of all, the tadpole here, if I introduce an ultraviolet cutoff in whichever way you want to do it, this diverges as log squared, ultraviolet cutoff, plus log lambda. And then there is also, let me just put the value here, h squared over 6 lambda, h squared, eta squared. I know it's boring. What can I tell you? Yeah, I know. I understand it. There are units somewhere. But this is another point. The point is that there is a polling 1 over delta. You can find it there 5 years ago. The pole has been since rediscovered in many ways, therefore confirming this result, plus infrared finite and ultraviolet finite objects. In fact, this is the pole that Sasha showed before. I'm going to focus on superhorizon modes. And we did a calculation also for subhorizon modes. And I'm going to introduce the same perturbative expansion. Namely, I'm going to pursue exactly the program here, writing chi as a chi0 plus a chi1, and solve the chi1 equation with the Green's function accordingly. So I'm going to just borrow word by word what I did before. Yes, let me just make the point clear. And what one finds are these famous logarithmic divergences. This A, this, let me write this eta to the beta plus. These are the solutions of the unperturbed equation with some coefficient delta plus. These famous logarithms that appear in the Sitter, minus B, eta minus. These are the solutions, I'm going to write them down here, B minus the log of eta over eta 0, where beta plus minus is simply 1 half plus minus nu. And this quantity is D plus D minus is minus 1 over 2 nu. 3 lambda, so it's lambda over delta with some coefficients, plus 6 over h0, h delta, 6g squared delta. And this quantity here is minus 1 over 2 nu. The same quantity here, 3 lambda over delta, plus there is, which is 1 over 6 pi squared, 1 over 2 pi squared. Not important. The important thing is that these two objects are the same. These two objects are not. When I look at this and I put the chi0 solution, the chi0 solution is A eta beta plus B eta beta minus. Again, you recognize that these are renormalizations of the amplitudes. So I'm going to pursue exactly what we did before. Exactly point by point. I'm going to cancel those secular divergences expressed as logarithms. These are also linear in time in the Sitter, by the way. Cancel those divergences, and lo and behold, what one finds is that chi of eta equals eta over eta 0 to the power gamma, a 0, eta over eta 0 to a beta plus renormalized plus a b 0 eta over eta 0 a beta minus renormalized. So there is a renormalization of the exponents, a new scaling of the exponents, and then there is this overall amplitude that is actually decaying as eta goes to 0. This is what I interpret as my decay rate. In fact, if I go back to cosmic time, this eta is e to the ht, so this becomes e to the minus gamma h times t. Okay, but this is the manner that this, and let me just write down what the gamma is. And with this, I will finish with some caveats. This is basically 1 over nu g squared over h squared delta squared. Now, this is not relevant. This is a number. What is relevant is that this particle, there is only one particle here, is decaying into itself. This decay rate is actually describing the physics in which this chi zero, this is a super horizon mode, is actually decaying into k equals zero minus k equals zero. How do we know this? It's because these infrared divergences are coming from the small k region in the loop integral there. And this corresponds precisely to the decay of a particle with zero moment super horizon into two of their own super horizon quanta. And this is a consequence of there being no thresholds in the Sitter spacetime. There is no energy conservation that will prevent one particle decaying onto itself into the quanta of itself, or any particle with mass m from decaying into higher mass particles. There simply is no threshold there. And the threshold comes precisely from energy conservation. We did also the calculation for super sub-horizon modes. And in fact, the leading term that results in the decay of this sub-horizon mode K is a Bremsstrahlung contribution of the particle itself, where here is a Q near zero, and this is a K minus Q. These are Bremsstrahlung time processes, and it happened similar to what Emil was saying. They also give logarithms. They can also be exponentiated. And I'm not going to tax your patience any longer. But there are divergences in the m equals zero limit. And we worried about that 5 years ago. But then let me come back to that. Let me come back to that point after that, because we worried about that. And we resolved that ourselves without saying anything but something that Burgess and Holman had just recently looked at.
Mass is zero.
Yes. Now, I just want to really finish here by stating the following. At this amplitude, and let me just state it in a manner that will wake you all up. Now, this is a bispectrum. So if I consider these objects are curvature perturbations, and I'm vanishing F and N, does it mean that the curvature perturbations are actually decaying? And does it truly mean that this decay can actually change the power spectrum of this perturbation? By the way, the same thing happened much more technically involved with the 5^4, where now the particle decays into 3-order-on quanta. This is a trispectrum, if we think in terms of curvature perturbation. So one of the lessons that you should take, and let me just finish here, is that perhaps these decay processes, once written in terms of curvature perturbations, are saying something about this bispectrum, or that the bispectrum is saying something about this decay of potential decay of superhorizon curvature perturbations. We have not investigated that, and I hope that this talk has motivated at least some of you to pursue that. Thank you.
In the lateness of the hour, perhaps we should have only just a few questions and then deal with them over coffee break, have discussions over coffee break. So please choose the people who wish to answer.
So if you have only single field inflation in your what you finally mentioned, then I think the considerable quantity preserves and prevents the particle decay if you don't have entropy perturbations. Because there is a considerable quantity which tells us that after several efforts, after horizon axis, there is no involve of the.
Well, the All I can tell you in the defense of this is that this is an actual calculation. And I pursue the same line of reasoning from Minkowski. And what this program has going for it is that it has proven to be right in Minkowski spacetime. And this dynamical renormalization group is akin to solving the Dyson series and looking for poles in the Dyson. So whether that is what's going on here, I don't know. My hunch is yes. But this is an actual calculation. So it's really incumbent upon people that say, well, there is a conserved quantity that is preventing this, to see how this conserved quantity enters in this calculation and prevents this. But this is ideally a calculation specifically with just one field high to highlight that the field high can decay itself and the main physical reasons that there are no particle thresholds, which is something to understand here. Yes?
So how do you think about the fact that the width goes to infinity? Is interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Remember that this object here is a very good question. I'm glad that you brought this up. We haven't written that up because we didn't want to confuse pairs with uppers in these papers. And we were already fed up eating uppers, so we just left this in the background. But the idea is the following. If it's sort of a country idea. And suppose that I know that this tadpole here is actually generating, if there is a mass term, is actually generating a single pole. This is a single pole. One can prove that this is a single pole. And so the way I see this is from my experience with thermal field theory is that this is akin to generating some mass term. And so if one has something of the form lambda phi squared, I would say that this goes to phi lambda phi squared plus lambda, sorry, phi to the fourth minus, and there are factors three here, phi squared, the Cartier factorization, and I'm going to align this with the mass term. And then I'm going to sort cell consistently for the mass term.
Yeah, okay, so there's a mass in the end. There is a gap.
There is a gap in the answer. Yeah. Now, whether the gap you put it by hand or you find it self consistently, that's a different story. But there is a gap equation now that this phi squared equals this tadpole, which is basically 1 over lambda phi squared, where this gives you phi squared proportional to 1 over square root of lambda. And this is the result that has been found in other places. It's not included in that, simply we put it by hand. But you can also think of it as being the counter term that I just put in there. You know, I can put a mass and subtract it at the end and solve self consistently for that mass. I mean, those of us who have done many body theory for 30 odd years have done this forever, probably for too long.
Maybe just one more question.
Yes, I want to add just a comment. We have already discussed, we have done the other side of the computation. I mean, the computation which was done on the other blackboard, and we confirmed this kind of property. For the principal series, we don't see this property when the mass is low. There are these discrete part of, so it's open, the question, I think.
Yeah, in particular in this region.
In the interesting
region where
because this phenomenon seems to be, to my understanding, which may be a poor understanding, if a low mass field can decay like that into itself, maybe the entire inflation has problem. If the inflation can keep decaying in itself.
Yeah, this is one of the IR issues that are studying here.
Okay, so let's thank Dan again.